Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
Welcome to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me tonight for episode 101 is one... Well, that's a lot of ones, isn't it? Eric Nathanson. Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing well because the Giants are doing well, and they're starting off like gangbusters this year. It's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a 5-2 start so far. Could have been 6-1, but
I mean, it also could have been 5-2 with the game the next night. You know what I mean? They kind of traded ones there Friday and Saturday night.
Exactly. So let's talk about this. So they took 2 out of 3 in Milwaukee, which, you know, it was pretty standard. Although both, let me just say this real quickly. They have 5 wins, 2 losses. All 5 wins are technically of the comeback variety. So pretty amazing, to be honest. In fact, none of their 5 wins, they've actually had the lead in the beginning. So every single game they've actually, or every single win, they've come back and won it, no matter how many they were down. But like you said, against LA, they won the first 2 games. And then game number 3, we have the... It was funny because I was like tweeting out, oh, here we go. Rookie sensation, you know, first guy, major league debut, the Giants are going to fail. Now, I was being kind of sarcastic about it because the Giants do have a history of failing against, you know, new blood. Let's say.
They make all the new pitchers look like Cy Young.
They really do. But no one expected what Stripling did on, three nights ago. Unbelievable. So he pitches 7 1/3 no hit innings, walks a guy, and he's at 100 pitches. And now look, the guy is coming off Tommy John surgery. You know, he hadn't even pitched in AAA. He was a AA pitcher. He was 15th on the depth chart for the Dodgers. So, you know, he's a no-namer. But Bumpus Jones... You know who that name is, right?
That's the name, Bumpus Jones.
Bumpus, I love that name, by the way.
I did too.
I might name my next kid Bumpus. Bumpus Jones, 1892, is the only pitcher in Major League history to throw a no-hitter in his Major League debut. Now here's Stripling's Major League debut. He's pitched no hits, or he's allowed no hits, through 7 1/3. Now, granted, he is at 100 pitches, but, you know, this day and age, 100 seems to be the magic number, right?
Yeah.
Do you think Bumpus Jones and his manager cared about 100 pitches? No.
No.
Those guys pitched like 200 pitches, you know? It wasn't an issue back then. Now, I understand protecting a young man's arm. I do, but I think the wear and tear and the injury potential is over a long period of time. Not over one game.
Really?
You know?
So you wanted to see him go for it?
I did. Absolutely, I wanted to see him go for it.
I called this guy a
Giants fan, of course.
I called him a no-name in the Friday Five. He was like somebody we'd never heard of. You're right. Everybody got injured, and that's why he was pitching.
No, and that's why he was there, right? So,
yep.
So Dave Roberts comes out after the walk and pulls him and puts in Hatcher, and we all know what happened then. Trevor Brown, it wasn't Buster Posey, it wasn't Hunter Pence, it wasn't Brandon Belt, it wasn't Brandon Crawford, it wasn't even Kelby Tomlinson. It was freaking Trevor Brown. Trevor freaking Brown. 0 home runs in the major leagues. 0. And what does he do? He hits his first major league home run. I mean, there was something almost, you know, serendipitous about that. I mean, don't you think?
If
Buster Posey hit it, everybody would have, you know, would have gone crazy nonetheless. But the fact that Trevor Brown hit it, it was just like, just almost sweet serendipity. It made sense.
It almost reminded me a couple years back, the Giants went on back-to-back nights early in the season against the Dodgers. Buster did exactly that. He homered to win a game like Crawford did later in this game. And the next night, Guillermo Quiroz homered to
That's
win a game.
That's right.
And it was one of those games. Catcher. It was one of those games. It was an 11-10 game or something like that where it was like, of course, this makes sense. Yeah. It has to. On a night like that where weird things happen, where Stripling, you know, has the no-hitter going and Roberts makes the move to take him out of the game, you know, it's almost like – I said it that night. I said baseball is the greatest theater. Because, you know, there's so many things that were unfolding in front of us Friday night. You know, Stripling has the no-hitter going. But, you know, he's walked four guys now, and he's at 100 pitches. He's, like you said, he's coming off the Tommy John. Never pitched above Double A. You know, first major league start of all time, you know, and nobody's ever done that. And it weighs and passes through all those things. And then, you know, the story immediately, as soon as Trevor Brown faces Hatcher and takes that ball out, and it had to be somebody like Trevor Brown. It couldn't have been. You're right. It couldn't have been somebody like Buster Posey. It wouldn't have had that same kind of
not even Madison Bumgarner.
Right. It wouldn't have had that same standalone quality to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think it would eventually like kind of fade into things, but to have a guy like Trevor Brown, his first major league home run, to suddenly, you know, tie the game for the Giants, it was miraculous type. I mean, nobody expected him to do that when he came to the plate.
Not a single soul. I mean, he's never been a power hitter.
Here's a random stat. In the history of Major League Baseball, there have been three guys named Trevor to hit home runs. In the history of Major League Baseball, that night, two guys named Trevor are Trevor Brown and Trevor Story of the Rockies, who everybody's heard of, both hit home runs. So there's only been five guys named Trevor ever to do it, and two of them did it on the same night. Friday
that's
night when Trevor
weird.
Brown. Yeah, it was totally went by. Sorry,
yeah.
But I mean, it also like put a cap on Dodgers Giants type stuff. I mean, this was like one of the most intense series I can remember in the first week of a season ever.
Oh, absolutely! It felt like September, you know, October. Absolutely,
and it felt like the players were into it that way too, and it wasn't just, you know, us on as fans watching at home and interacting, or even, you know, the pulse at the ballpark. It felt like the players had that kind of a thought process too.
I just you know, as a baseball fan, I felt for Stripling, and despite the fact that he's a Dodger, you know, it's like I got to try and disassociate my fandom with him, because, you know, it's not his fault he was drafted by the Dodgers and came up through their system, right? Like, if I was drafted by the Dodgers, just like Sergio Romo was a Dodger fan growing up, you know, and he was drafted by the Giants. Trevor Brown was a Dodger fan growing up. He was drafted by the Giants. So it's like you have to disassociate yourself when you're trying to be analytical. But my point is, if it was flipped around, flipped on its head, if the Giants had a rookie who had pitched 7 1/3 of no-hit innings and got to 100 pitches and had a 2-0 lead, I would be screaming at Bochy taking him out. Now, here's the reason why. Number one, he's a rookie. He's way down on the depth chart. He's not Madison Bumgarner. He's not Johnny Cueto. He's not Jeff Samardzija or Matt Cain. If he blows his arm out, probably not going to affect the future of the franchise, right? I'm being honest.
Okay. Yeah, but that's the future of the franchise, though, not the future of the kid. Like, maybe he is the next, you know, Madison Bumgarner, or this guy,
that,
or
right?
that guy.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But, you know, as a fan, you know, I'd be saying to myself, I mean, the chances of blowing out your elbow because you've gotten to 120 pitches are small. It's long-term wear and tear. Not saying it was impossible, but saying it was unlikely. Here's the thing. If you, first of all, major league debut, never can get that again, right? You only have one
shot.
That's
true.
Okay. So, major league debut, he has a no hitter. Only person ever to pitch no hitter is Bumpus Jones in his major league debut. He has 5 outs to go. That reason alone, you got to let him go. Number two, even if it wasn't his major league debut, the chances of him ever having getting to the point of five outs left for a no-hitter are slim to none. Most pitchers never get there. The fact that he's there, you know, it's not going to happen again, most likely. He's not freaking Nolan Ryan with seven no-hitters. It's not going to happen. So those two reasons alone is why you need to leave him in there, because granted, he walked a guy. That was his fourth walk. Next guy, he allows a home run. It's tied. He doesn't get the loss. You pull him. You put another guy. Or he allows a hit. You pull him. It's not guaranteed he's going to pitch another 25, 30 pitches, right? You got to think about, okay, he's at 100 pitches. Let him go. You know, Tim Lincecum, I know he has a rubber arm, granted. But, you know, one of his no-hitters, what, 147 pitches?
I think so, yeah. Well,
against the Padres, are ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying that he would have gone there because he only had five more outs. He wouldn't have gotten 147. But, you know, if he walks another guy, if he gets to 120 pitches, if he allows a hit, whatever, then you have more of a case. But just, it was that magical 100 I think a lot of people just kind of focused on. And, you know, I know he himself and his father actually was very gracious in accepting why it happened. And it was unfortunate for the Dodgers, you know, what happened after that. Good for the Giants. So,
you're right.
You know, but the Giants fans, I would say, could have been robbed from seeing history. Not saying that was a good thing. Believe me, rather see a win than Dodgers pitching a no-hitter.
Right, but like I look at it as like I know what you mean about the 100 pitch mark, and I don't know, for me I when you said that I was like, really, it was exactly 100, and I had to go look, and it was, because just from personally from my eye test of watching thousands of pitchers over the years, I thought he looked tired. I thought he
didn't said he was tired.
Have the same, yeah, I didn't think he had the same stuff anymore.
No, he said he was tired, but again, the chances of injury are very low. Pitching a couple more batters.
Well,
right,
but what if he overextends himself though, because he's not, and he compensates. You know, he's coming back from a Tommy John surgery. Like, I'm not arguing. Well, I mean, I was fine with them pulling him. Forget the outcome.
No, as a Giants fan, I was very happy.
Yeah, well, tonight the same thing was going on in the Reds-Cubs game. Brandon Finnegan of the Reds had a no-hitter through six innings against the Cubs. He actually took it to 6 2/3. But he was up at that magical mark by that point. Finally, David Ross got a hit with two outs in the seventh inning. So, you know, they didn't even have to worry about that. But he was at like 109 pitches. And it's a weird problem for these managers to have in this day and age. Do I pull a young guy because, you know, it was Finnegan's like third start ever or something like that, just like it was Stripling's first start ever, or do I let him go? What a weird, they didn't have this problem back in 1948
because there were no pitch counts.
No,
none. They just pitched until they were tired or just, you know, gave up three hits in a row. I mean, that's just the way it was. But, you know, today, and not every, you know, number or shoe size fits a shoe, but it's crazy to me.
Well, I'll say this. I learned something, okay, and it's funny. I learned something from the Los Angeles Dodgers organization. When I was a kid, my father, who – it's funny. I just mentioned you earlier tonight. It was a dentist, and he got curious about pitch counts and wear and tear on arms, and he started researching it. And he contacted the doctor of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they started a correspondence. And because of him, he introduced pitch limits into our youth baseball program because of the Los Angeles Dodgers and the advice that he got from them and things like that. And he talked to them about, right. And I have to wonder, like, is this an organization that has been looking at stuff like this? Cause this happened in the 80s. So have they been looking at this like this for 30, 40 years? You know what I mean? Or, you know, back in the day, would they have gone with it? I mean, this is a problem that they might've had back in 1996, the Dodgers, but other teams might not. Like, so I have to wonder if an organization like that, they like to, you know, from the top down, they might have, you know, a set number of this and a set number of that that we don't know about. 100, you know, is that, you know, magic number for everybody, it seems, though. You're right.
Yeah. Aside from Stripling, you know, blowing up his arm, you know, I think basically Dave Roberts, and here I am defending a Dodgers manager, by the way.
Yeah, I did it too.
Right? I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, most Giants fans are like, thank you very much for doing that. And I was saying it at the time, but, you know, for history's sake, for the baseball fan's perspective, the objective, you know, 30,000 foot view, if you're Dave Roberts, you pull him, you put in a new guy, he gives up the tying home run, you're going to get nailed, right?
Yep.
You're going to get persecuted. If you leave him in, aside from him ripping his elbow apart again, even if he gives up the game tying or game leading home run, you go, well, he rode him until he gave up a hit. There's nothing wrong with that. So from a manager's point of view, that's why I'm surprised, because if he gave up another walk, maybe I could see it, but I still wouldn't do it. But if obviously the moment he gives up a hit, you pull him. But you got five outs left. This is the only chance he's ever going to have for the first start. It's probably the last chance he'll ever have at this point for a no-hitter. You got to let him do it.
Well, you know, I will say this. You know, something that applies to football struck me as you were talking, and then we can move on from the Stripling, is that you basically pointed out that Dave Roberts managed not to lose instead of managing to win.
Yes.
And it wasn't just that he managed not to lose for that one game, but he was managing not to lose his job, not to lose the pen. You know what I mean?
Well, by making that move.
And that's not the way. That's not the way to win. As opposed to, I think you're right. I think Bochy might have left him out there, and we might have all been screaming that that's fine.
I know it was the World Series Game 7, totally different situation, but still, if you're considering physical harm to your player. He didn't give a crap about Bumgarner. He let him ride those last five innings.
Right?
He had been worked hard. Now, we know he's a horse, but, you know, it wasn't coming off Tommy John. But that's what I'm saying. He wasn't Clayton Kershaw, okay? This is Stripling. He was the 15th on the depth chart. If he even blew out his arm going for a no-hitter, first of all, wouldn't affect the Dodgers organization that much, right?
Okay. No.
They have everyone else on the DL. Second of all, no one would have blamed Dave Roberts, because it'd be like, he's going for no hitter in his first start in his career. I mean, it just seemed to me like he was trying to protect his pitcher, which is a noble thing. I get it. But his job security was not predicated on that at all.
Right. You're right, and he probably – that's why I say he was managing not to lose, because in a sense, he didn't want to lose.
Well, like everybody said, it was ghosts of Mattingly, right? Mattingly and Matt Williams and all these other managers made some very questionable moves.
It's funny, because I thought Roberts had a worse game the next night, because he made all sorts of weird ass there was like somebody in a double switch that didn't work, and they like almost ran out of bench players in the game that they came back on. Yeah. And won on Saturday. I thought he managed that game worse than the game that they lost the night before. Which, it really is. Which also goes to show you how, yes, the manager has an impact on the game, but like, there's only so much of an impact he can have. It's still up to the players to perform.
So, let's continue here. The Giants, of course, stole that game from the Dodgers. There's no doubt
they stole two hits and they won the game.
With two hits, right? Yeah. Now, the very next day, they're up. And it's the ninth inning, and Casilla has a little bit of a brain fart and loads the bases, and they have one out. And Adrian Gonzalez is up, and I'm thinking, I'm actually sitting at a park with my kids listening to the MLB at-bat app, and I'm just going, okay, well, this game's over. I mean, there's no way the Giants are going to win this game. And to hear John Miller go, and Gonzalez swings, and here's a double play ball, and he boots it. It was very frustrating because, you know, you figure, you know, Gonzalez is going to get a base hit. He's going to get a sac fly. He's going to pull it somewhere. Whereas the force, you know, they're going to tie it, if not win it right here. And literally it was a gift wrapped to Kelby Tomlinson for the double play, you know, and look, I don't fault the guy. He's, you know, Joe Panic's backup. It's going to happen, but you know, clearly that would have ended the game. The Giants would have won, and they would have had a chance to go for the sweep today, or yesterday, I should say. But that being said, you got to think about butterfly chaos theory, right? The butterfly effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if they had won yesterday, who knows what would have happened? Or 2 days ago, I should say. Who knows what would have happened yesterday? So, you know, point being. The Giants stole one in game two. They lost one in game three. It evens out. That's baseball.
And, it does. It's the games like Sunday's game.
Yeah.
That they win those games. Those are the important
they
ones.
They went down 5-0.
I left the house. I left the house. I went to go eat some early dinner. I was like, I'm
I
done
saw
with this
5-0, and I went to go shopping.
Yeah.
And then I came back, and it was 5-5. And I was like, what? Okay. This is cool.
Yeah. We were out to lunch, and I tuned into my at-bat app right as Brandon Belt hit a homer. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. And I put it back down, and we went back to lunch. And by the time I got home, they had taken the lead.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, the Giants have 5 wins. All 5 wins are from a comeback variety. A couple of them have been more dramatic than others. And so I think 5-2 is where we should consider ourselves lucky, to be honest.
Well, they did what a baseball team is supposed to do to win their division and win is to win the series. And they took 2 of 3 from Milwaukee. You win the series. You take 3 of 4 from LA, and you get the added bonus of, you know, pushing LA farther behind. Yep. They did what good teams do this week. They really did. And the key to it all was not, you know, spectacular early season pitching performances. It was this offense that's just gone bananas.
Yeah, the offense has been crazy, actually. I'll just skip to that right now. So they've hit home runs in all 7 games so far. Yep. That's the first time they've done that since 2003. In fact, they've hit 14 home runs, averaging 2 home runs per game. That only trails Colorado, and they have 17, of course, 7 by Trevor Story.
Right.
And it's Colorado, so... Again, you look at those stats and you just kind of go, whatever. I don't care. They're basically first. That's as far as I'm concerned.
Colorado stats don't count.
Especially since they started the year in Arizona, which is another Colorado, basically. So
that's true.
Yeah. So, no, they've hit the ball extremely well. Brandon Belt, of course, signed a new contract, extended through 2021, I believe. So what do you think about that, Eric?
Well, the Belt contract or the the offense. I had a couple quick stats on them.
Yeah,
everybody on the offense is homered, but Kelby and Blanco, all starting 9 guys from opening day. All starting 9 guys from opening day, including Madison Bumgarner, have homered this season.
So everyone has homered on the hitters.
Right.
All hitters have homered except for Tomlinson and Blanco.
Yeah, because Adrianza, he hit a home run off Kershaw on Saturday.
Yeah.
Adrianza, he of the 2 career home runs, one to break up an Andy Pettitte no-hitter and the other one to tie a game against Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
Or to take the lead against Adrianza. Clayton Kershaw. Yeah, right. I mean, this guy, he picks his spots, I'll say that. But yeah, all the guys. Span, you know, had his. So they've all been, you know, hitting a long ball. And the other thing that jumped out at me offensively is, like, Angel Pagan has just been going off.
Yes. He's looked good in the number 9 spot. I mean, seriously.
He's hitting .320. Like, I remember last year Angel was so good early on, but he's scored 8 runs. The guy's hitting 9th 5 out of 7 games. He scored 8 runs this week.
I know.
How? So the offense just jumped out at me. And it's funny, Belt, he didn't do it the day of the contract, but the next day he hit the home run during the comeback on Sunday. Belt, I'm a Belt fan. I love the mentality that the Giants seem to be taking right now. And it has to do with why this offense clicks and why this team thrives, is they seem to realize they have a core group of homegrown players. And they're going to hitch their wagon to them. And ownership at this time is going to try to make as much money as they can off it while winning. You know what I mean? Everybody is says, okay, this is a chance for all of us to do it. And I think, you know, by having now Belt and Posey are locked up till what, 2021? Brandon Crawford's locked up until.
So here's what's crazy about the Giants. They've locked up every single one of their players that's under 30. Through after 30.
And that includes Duffy and Panic with their arbitration years.
Yes. So every single main giant who is under 30 years old will be a giant by age 30 or older. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, yeah. You talk about homegrown talent. Of course, the infield is homegrown. A lot of people thought that there was a possibility that the Giants may not sign Belt to an extended contract because of the possibility of Posey moving to first base. You know, because of the wear and tear on his legs, you know, a la Mike Piazza and other, you know, guys like him. But now that he's signed through 2021, granted he can play outfield, that's not his future. He's going to be at first base. So that's the next 5 years. And when you think about that, Posey's going to be catching. Okay. So
he is. He's the franchise catcher for good.
So everybody who thought that he was moving to first base in the next couple years, that ain't happening, guys.
No.
He's a catcher.
Well, okay? at the press conference for Belt's contract, Bobby Evans said it. He said, look, we haven't had any internal discussions about moving Buster to first long term. And he called Brandon Belt a Gold Glove caliber first baseman, and they wanted to lock in all their homegrown players, you know, for this reason. He said sometimes – and Belt's also been the discussion of trade rumors in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And he kind of acknowledged that by saying that – the Giants, you know, would rather have a proven somebody that they know. Why would they want to then try something different in free agency or a trade when they already have a known commodity in their clubhouse? So, you know, it was one of those, we're going to keep this core intact for a long time.
I personally love it. I do. Yeah. I didn't want to see Belt leave, and I didn't want to see Posey move anywhere else. So, pretty cool move by the Giants.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. It really taught me something about certain kinds of chatter that gets out there, because like they really have been looking at Belt as their long-term first baseman for a few years now.
He's one of those guys, though, to be honest. He just seems like every year he's about to break through, and then he gets injured, you know? You know, McCovey Chronicles had a great article about Brandon Belt's contract and his comps, basically looking at other first basemen over the last 30 years that were similar to him at age 27 or 28, wherever he is now. He's 27 or 28. Anyway, point being, looking at contracts and how that extended out for those other first basemen who started where he is now in terms of OPS plus, right, which is around 125 for Belt right now. Looking at how those contracts fared versus what Belt, you know, might be. And there were some interesting comparisons. I mean, he looks like he compares with like a Kent Herbeck, you know.
Huh.
Herbeck has a few more home runs. You know, it's, I'll post it in the show notes. It's an interesting article. Some throwbacks. It's definitely not Rafael Palmeiro.
No.
Or Jason Giambi, you know, stats because of certain PEDs. But point being, you know, if the Giants get a good return on their investment, he should have a good string of years here coming up, other than him having some more concussions, you know, taking him off the table.
Yeah, and the Giants are basically saying the performance, the production that we get from you, Brandon, is fine with us. Just continue doing what you're doing. And I think that, you know, puts a guy at ease. You know, he's got, again, this is a team that, yes, it's a team, but at the top of the chain is Buster Posey, Madison Bumgarner, and Hunter Pence. And if you know that you don't have to be one of the superstar guys on the team, you know, you're put at ease. You're okay with hitting your, you know, 20 home runs and getting your 85, 90 RBIs a year. And you can carve out a nice little career doing that and be on winning teams. And that's the kind of player Belt is. Herbeck is exactly. That makes sense. I saw that go by today on my timeline, but I didn't get a chance to click it. I was very curious to see it. I think it's a great signing. Article. Yeah, I think it's a great signing. I think Belt – you're right. He always feels like he's on the cusp, and maybe this is just what he is, but well, you know, what he is good enough.
It's effectively 6 years, $79 million, which is a little over $13 million per year. And, you know, first blush, you go, whoa, $13 million per year. But then you think Panda's earning 20, right? You just kind of go, okay, you know, that's really not that bad, you know? Belt's belt isn't going to explode when he swings.
Oh my God, that was hilarious.
Sorry.
Oh, it was funny as heck. I saw it before I got on here tonight. I was watching Jimmy Kimmel, and even Jimmy Kimmel had the clip of Pablo Sandoval's belt. I'm not kidding you. It was so funny that it made late night television. Pablo has become a punchline.
Yeah, so
because his waistline burst.
This is an audio podcast. You can't see this, but if you haven't seen it, please look it up. It's an unbelievable video, but essentially, some certain tweets and vines will summarize it as such. Panda's belt retires. Panda's belt gives up. Panda's belt taps out. It goes on and on and on. And it's look, you know, me and Willie were the biggest proponents for Panda being re-signed by the Giants before he was signed, you know, with the Red Sox. In fact, the Giants, of course, offered him more money, and he said, screw you, I'm going to the Red Sox, whatever. I'm so glad I was wrong. I really am, because, you know, he is not only not performed well, he is not the starting third baseman for the Red Sox. He has gained more weight than he has with the Giants, and now, of course, he has the social media disdain of having his belt literally fall apart during a swing on Sunday.
Unbelievable. Well, I don't want to defend Pablo because I really dodged a bullet there. it's funny because you guys had me converted and I was all aboard the Pablo train.
I was.
I feel like the Giants are Keanu in the Matrix and Pablo. Yeah.
Bullet duck.
But to be fair, and I'm not trying to be funny, but to be fair to Pablo, R.A. Dickey was the pitcher. It was a knuckleball.
Yeah.
And like he was out on his front foot. So all his weight shifted and, you know, you know what I mean. You've played ball. He got all his weight out.
I get it. And... But Eric, I get that. I do. That's a amicable defense. But at the same time, who is the last major leaguer you've seen on video with their belt coming apart during a swing?
Literally nobody. And it could only happen to Pablo. That's the thing. It could only happen to Pablo.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's like... It doesn't happen twice a year. It's none of us have ever seen it. It may have happened, granted, but none of us have ever recounted any of this ever happening. And it was Pablo. Okay. So it was just serendipitous. I'm sorry. Yeah. It just was. It could have happened to anyone, right? It could.
It's like the cherry on top of the Jackass cake.
It really was. And, you know, the Blue Jays fans the next day were coming out with belts and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And you just expected it. The dude is just, you know, look, I don't feel sorry for him because he's making $20 million a year, right?
Right.
No one cares about that. But at the same time, I was talking with someone at CrossFit. Here I am going to CrossFit today, right? I do the 8:30 fitness class and then I did the 9:30 normal class. I did 2 hours in a row, kicked my ass, sweated my balls off. Just ridiculous amount of work. No one forced me to go. Whatever I eat is what I choose to eat.
Which isn't everything.
It really is everything, including alcohol. But point being, the dude is making $20 million a year. He could literally hire an army of people to not only... not just say, this is what you should eat. They can cook. They can make his meals for him, right? I don't know those people. I can definitely look and know what I should cook for myself, but that's my choice. He can say, cook this for me, make it 500 calories per meal, and if you don't, I'm going to kill you or fire you, right? He has that choice. And then... the whole workout thing, no one can work out for you, but just like CrossFit, they can design, you know, a workout for you. And, oh, by the way, you don't work 40 hours a week most of the year, right? You can lose your weight. It's simple physics, man. And the fact that he came into this season fatter than he's ever been, just I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it.
To me, it's a testament, and this is a reach, but it's a testament to Marvin Miller and the Players Union for making baseball contracts guaranteed.
Yeah.
Because it's funny. You can't get albatrosses like that off the books unless you have to eat a bunch of money to send somebody somewhere. Like Jose Reyes is, you know, $22 million or something. The Rockies are going to have to pay him this year, and here they've got the Trevor Story guy. You know, he's got the protection to do that because you can't pull this crap in other sports. You just can't. You get cut. You have no way of feeding your family. But once he signed on the dotted line and knew he was guaranteed 90 million or whatever it was, he knew he could do whatever the hell he wanted. And it's just kind of sad that he chose to do that.
And that's the problem, right? It's guaranteed money because, like you said, on the dotted line, it doesn't matter. You don't need to play another single inning. That's it. You get all the money.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to say it's a problem because I mean, I'm all for baseball players making their money. And it's funny, when we talk contracts, I could really care less what the numbers actually are. To me, it just matters what they fit in the grand scheme of the business at the time. You know what I mean? As long as it's, you know, competitive or, you know, they're one of the top payrolls, I don't care. You know, I don't care what the exact numbers are. The Giants have $95 million committed in 2021 to five guys.
Wow.
It's Brandon Belt, Buster Posey. I just had the list.
Crawford.
Up. Crawford, who just came aboard. I'm getting there. 2021. Here it is. Cueto, if he stays in his contract. And that's it. Okay, so it's four guys. Because we've got $22 million, $21 million, now $21 million or something like that. They have something. I did the math the other day. I don't know why I lost this, but it shows as long as it's relative, I'm good with that. And, you know, it's like a guy like Pablo. He went, he got his money, he did his thing. Yep. It's just a shame for the sport of baseball. But hey, everybody needs a clown, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I was the biggest Pablo supporter in the world. And even before his 2014 season, I thought I was vindicated, but apparently not. So.
Well, no, I think you are. And I think Giants fans, too, should remember this. Just because Pablo's turned into a joke doesn't take away all those great times we had cheering for him.
No, it doesn't take
away. You know,
the
three home runs against Verlander. Just the
I was there for that game, yeah.
Exactly. The joy that we felt from watching him. You know, he used to be our lovable guy. And, you know, when he would bend and just because he's turned into a joke, it doesn't take any of that away from us at all. We're lucky we have Matt Duffy. If we didn't have Matt Duffy, we'd be like, you know, well, Pablo wouldn't be doing this if he had stayed here. Instead, we don't really have to care about Pablo because Matt Duffy has turned into Matt freaking Duffy.
Yeah.
It's made it so much easier. Think about that. We'd be talking about Pablo like, oh, come home to San Francisco, you know, and, you know, maybe he just misses being at home. I really think that fans would think that way if Duffy hadn't turned into such a great player.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder if Panda would have been pretty good if he had signed with the Giants.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know.
So. Yeah, but he wanted to be the man, so apparently he wanted to be three men. All right, let's look ahead at what the Giants got going on this week. There was a weird little four-game homestand. They started on the road in Milwaukee. They came home for four against L.A., and they're back on the road this week. They're going to Colorado for three and then L.A. over the weekend for three. It's going to be lots of runs the next 3 days, right?
Oh, yes. And, in fact, Trevor Story, who has been a story, he has set the major league record for – number of home runs in his first six games, not just as a rookie, like for anyone.
Seven. How does he seven home runs? This guy was on fire. He hit a home run in each of his first four games. And the only guys off the top of my head that I can think of that have done that, there's four other guys that have done that. Two of those guys are Willie Mays and Mark McGwire.
Yeah.
You know, that's a special list. But the Giants this week, here's the thing. We watched the Giants this week. They won. Not only did they win 12-3 opening day, they won a one-run game the next day. And then over the weekend, we saw them win a couple one-run games, and then again, their offense carried them. They've shown that when they go to Colorado this week, we don't have to be worried about the starting pitchers. Like, if Matt Cain gives up six runs, it's not the end of the world. Nope. You know, if Jake Peavy gives up six runs, it's not the end of the world. It's okay. It's okay for the pitchers to get knocked around a little bit because the Giants offense is not going to stop hitting this season.
Right. So that's right. We have Samardzija, Peavy, and Cain.
And then Cain, correct. Right? Yeah.
So, yeah, that looks like a lot of runs, but at the same time, the Giants are going to score a lot of runs. So just see what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't really talk about this. The new lineup with the pitcher batting eighth, it's worked.
So far?
Yeah. It's not even that the pitcher's batting eighth. It's that Bochy now has Belt, Duffy, and Crawford split up. So that it's such a tough matchup late in games. You can't just bring in your lefty to mow through Crawford and Belt if he's going to try to. Yeah. And it's just – it's like there's no break in this lineup. When the pitcher's hitting eighth, once you hit Pagan again, it's like, oh, my God, you're not going to breathe for another eight hitters because Pagan rolls right into Span again, who rolls right into Panic, who's probably the best contact hitter, who rolls into Posey, who's the best overall guy, who rolls into Pence, who's then Belt. I mean, there's like no break from this Giants lineup. And we can see when they start going, they feed off each other.
They do.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they score 30 runs, maybe 35, 40 runs in the three games in Colorado. I they've gone double digits twice already. I can see them going double digits two more times in the next three days.
I see that too. Yeah. You know, just a matter of how their starters are going to, you know, contain themselves.
Well, they just got to keep them in games. Johnny Cueto did that yesterday. You know, he fell behind 5-0 early, and then he put together, what, six more innings? Five more innings. Of good baseball. He only let up one more run.
So, he had seven innings and six runs. Yep.
Right. So six more innings he pitched. He only gave up one run. He gave the team a chance to win. As long as the starters do that, this offense will be able to carry them.
Yeah.
So it's three in Colorado and then three in L.A. I think there's another Bumgarner Kershaw matchup on the horizon. I think Friday night in L.A. is... And the Sunday game is a Sunday night ESPN game.
Yep.
So everybody make sure to mark that in their scorecard.
Please do so. So I think I'm going to be able to attend next Monday's game against Arizona. So I don't know if we're going to have a podcast that night per se. Maybe in the afternoon.
Yeah, maybe beforehand.
Before I go.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. It'd be kind of cool to do that, actually.
Yeah, all right. Sold.
All right, so that's going to wrap up episode 101. So we missed Willie and Ben tonight. They had things going on, but of course Eric and I are your dedicated, very dedicated Giants fans.
He said groggy and sleepy.
Yeah, I know, right.
No, well, it's funny. This is episode 101, and you know how we used to name them for players?
Yeah.
I was looking through, and I was thinking we could name, you know, start naming for stats. Chili Davis had 101 home runs as a Giant.
Oh, crap. Really?
Yes.
Episode Chili Davis. I like it.
Because episode 44 was Willie McCovey, and Chili Davis, I think, wore 44 or something close. So we can make Chili the 101st episode.
All right. Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay, cool. So, Eric, you've been writing a lot for TortureCast. You want to say anything?
Yeah, no, just there'll always be the Friday Five up there. I'm still trying to see if I can get a couple other things up a week, but, you know, life doesn't always give me the opportunity. But the Friday Five will always be up. I'll always be looking for links and quotes of the week and stuff like that. So if anybody listening sees a story that I might have missed, a Giant story that's, you know, off the beaten path, because sometimes there's one that'll show up on like USA Today that not everybody sees or something like that, sure. Shoot it my way on Twitter @2OutHits. You know, but the Friday Five will always be there. you know, all season long to basically set the weekend and recap the week. So this Friday, it'll basically be recapping the Colorado series and looking ahead to the Dodgers Giants part two.
All right. Well, the Giants have started with a 5-2 record, looking pretty damn good. So for the absent Ben, you can follow him at Fried Doc. Fried Doc.
Fried Doc.
Fried Duck. Doc.
This fried dog tastes a little woody.
I know, right? I have some splinters.
Yeah.
For the absent Willie, you can follow him at Willie Dills. You can follow myself at ChadK21 and, of course, Eric at 2OutHits. So you can follow us collectively at TortureCast and, of course, follow us and like us on Facebook. So for me, for Eric, for the absent Willie and Ben, this is Chad King, and we'll see you next time for episode 102. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.